Welcome back in hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. And as always, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe, yesterday the guys on Darren Donick and Chase were having an interesting conversation with Adam Vingan, your colleague from The Athletic, about the Predators, some of the decisions that David Poile and company have to make this offseason, and the state of this roster for the Predators as they move forward now, with the next big event on the calendar being the expansion draft in the NHL. And one of the problems that the Predators have had that we've talked about for almost the entire history of their franchise has been the lack of a quote-unquote elite forward. They've had some really good forwards. Philip Forsberg, very good. Ryan Johansson, when he's been at the top of his game, very good. Victor Arvidsson, very good. Very rarely have they had an elite forward on their roster. As a matter of fact, like during their Predators tenure, like Paul Kariya, that may be it when you start to talk about elite-level forwards in this league. How do you fix that problem if you move forward here with the Predators? And right now, do the Predators have enough assets to go out and get one of those elite forwards? Darren Donick and Chase had Adam Vingan on yesterday and asked him that question. Here's what Adam Vingan from The Athletic had to say about how the Predators go about fixing their elite forward problem.
If the Predators were serious about acquiring someone like Mitch Marner, I don't think someone like Ryan Ellis or Matthias Ekholm gets it done. They're significantly older. They have larger contracts. I just don't think the Predators have the necessary assets to acquire a forward of that caliber. Like, I don't think their prospects are as highly touted as other teams like Los Angeles or Minnesota or New York, the Rangers. I don't think their roster players are that highly regarded to acquire a player like that. You know, to me, I feel like right now, the only way, and this might be extreme, the only way the Predators are going to be able to acquire a forward like that is if they tank. And I don't think they're going to do that. I am incredibly skeptical that the Predators can acquire a forward like that. And I do not believe they have one on their team. And I do not believe any of the top forwards on this team, whether it's Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson, Matt Duchene, Victor Arvidsson, are capable of reaching that level. So I kind of think they're sort of stuck when it comes to that.
So that was Adam Vingan on yesterday with Darren Donick and Chase. Joe, this is not a new conversation with this Predators team. We've had fans text us about it, call in about it, tweet about it. This is a pretty much yearly conversation with the Predators that you need to find an elite level forward to truly come in and compete for a Stanley Cup. I agree with Adam. I don't think they have one. I think they have good forwards. And I think I've been guilty of this as well. You've been kind of waiting for Philip Forsberg to take the step from being a good forward to becoming an elite forward. And I think we've just seen enough at this point to recognize he's just not going to do that. Like, I think he's a good forward. And there's nothing wrong with Philip Forsberg. I don't consider Philip Forsberg elite. At times, he has moments where he looks elite. But I don't think in the complete picture, Philip Forsberg is an elite forward. So as you look at this roster, the prospect pool that Adam brought up as well, how do you go about fixing this problem if you're the Predators? Because Adam Vingan used the word stuck. I would agree with that at the moment. How do you become unstuck? How do you fix this if you're David Poile and the Nashville Predators?
Well, I guess my question back would be, is that the only way to fix it? Like, you have to have an elite forward? Is that the only way to be, you know, to win? Is that the only way to chase a cup? I don't think it is at all.
Well,
look at the Islanders.
I wouldn't say that. Well, they have an elite forward. Matt Barzal is an elite forward.
I wouldn't call him elite. He's very, very good.
He is better. He is light years better than anybody the Predators have on their roster. Light years. It's not close.
I wouldn't call him elite, though.
He is an elite forward. You're crazy. Did you watch him in the third period last night?
He's a very, very good forward. He is really
unbelievable.
Good. I would agree he's better.
Light years better than anybody
in the
Predators?
He is light years better. It is not close. I can't believe I'm having this conversation.
I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm disagreeing with the word elite with him.
Well, what do you define as elite?
Well, McDavid, McKinnon,
well, okay.
Crosby, Ovechkin, Kucherov,
okay,
Pasternak.
So, okay, if we're going to talk about elite in the context of someone that the Preds could think about, I mean, obviously Marner's a name that gets thrown around a lot, right?
Yeah.
And I agree with Vingan. I mean, I don't think they've got.
It would take a lot.
Yeah. I mean, Eichel is another, and whatever. Okay, so you're.
Although maybe just getting him out of Buffalo, maybe that's the key.
It could be. Is it Taylor Hall? Is he part of the problem, or is it just that he's dragged down by their awfulness, you know? But regardless, Porth, your definition of that is tighter than yours, right? Than Robbie's.
I mean, I guess. Go watch that third period last night. Tell me Matt Barzal's not elite.
I think he's great.
Tyler on Periscope. Barzal is definitely elite. I can't really believe we're having this conversation. He's elite.
But, well, okay, so you're who are your elite forwards then?
McDavid, McKinnon, Matthews, Crosby, Ovechkin. I'd put Pasternak in there.
Now, to your point, Joe, go look at Montreal. I don't think they have one.
Right.
They have some really good ones. But they're not winning that way. Shutting people down, and Carey Price is Carey Price.
The Preds were two wins from winning it all without anyone that you would call an elite forward. Again, they had Forsberg, who was really good. And
now, that was the closest we've seen Ryan Johansson to playing like an elite forward, too.
But it wasn't, right? I mean, it was really good. It was a really good all-around game.
And what I would say, too, is that Barzal looks elite now, but he doesn't always play this way.
Sure.
Like, we've seen elite games from Philip Forsberg over the years, but he's not consistent
even serious,
enough.
You could say,
right?
You know,
but he's not consistent enough where we can even have him in this conversation.
Very few people are. I mean, like Mark Stone. If you want to look at who's still around, there's a guy who potentially at one point the Preds, right? It was a possibility. I mean, where's he on the scale?
I would not awfully good. I would not put him in the list of names that I just listed,
especially not offensively.
So, but by your definition, I mean, first of all, then to me, it's almost not a non-starter, but like they're not getting one of those guys. They're not getting one of those guys anytime soon. They're not going to tank, and if they do tank, that's no guarantee, right?
Yeah,
and what can they realistically do to try to get one of the? And if you sell out everything to try to get a forward like this, what are you left with? Is it worth that? I mean, to me, that's not the path, right? It's not the path for them. The path for them is to have more Forsberg-ish players.
Well,
for one thing.
I mean, let's look at Stanley Cup winners. Tampa got some elite forwards. Washington. Pittsburgh. That's how you win. I mean, it's...
Chicago.
I mean, that's how you win. And it's like we talk about goaltending. And look, goaltending's very important. I don't think anybody would question that. If you don't believe goaltending's important, go look at Montreal right now. It's very important. But, I mean, there are a couple exceptions here and there that you can find. By and large, you need elite forwards to win a championship in this league. I mean, it is what it is. And Tampa has got three of them at the moment. And that's why they're where they are.
Three elite forwards. I know Point is playing like that.
Point is elite.
Kucherov's elite.
Kucherov's elite.
Stamkos is elite.
Stamkos is elite.
I left off Patrick Kane off my list. Patrick Kane would be on the elite list.
Yeah, I mean, the Blues are like the example, the outlier example in so many ways in terms of, you know, cup winners. But, you know, there's one. I mean, you go through the list, most of these teams had a guy or a few guys, but it's different. Like, it's not every single year a top 10 superstar wins the cup. I mean, if that's the only way, then stop playing because the Preds aren't going to have that guy anytime soon.
But why not? I mean,
well, how are they going to get
here? They've been here 20-something years. You've never had that guy.
Well, how can you not find
the guy?
Well, that's a different
one time.
Well, I'm just saying, moving forward, like what's the path to it right now?
That's a good question. I mean,
you're not wrong that they should have had one by now. And again, Forsberg is...
He's good.
He's very good. To me, like, if you had a better top six, and you had a couple more guys around that with a good system, with a great defense core, with good goaltending, you could do some damage. You could have a chance right there. Like, it's to me, it's like it's not like in the NBA. You have to have at least one superstar, right?
Yeah.
To have a chance. I mean, I can't think of the last time a team won the NBA title that didn't have at least one, and usually more than one. But it's not an absolute must in this sport to me.
Well, I don't think you absolutely have to be drafting in the top three or five to find that guy.
No.
Like, do the majority of the elite forwards in the NHL come from that? Yes. But Pastrnak was mid-20s. I think the Preds picked before Boston picked Pastrnak. Barzal was in the middle of the first round. I think he was like 16th overall. So, like, the Preds have been in those spots in the first round before, and they have drafted forwards in those spots in the first round before. And for one reason or another, they haven't been able to develop those forwards into being even in the conversation of being elite.
Or they made poor choices.
Sure.
Period, from the start.
Sure, right? Yeah.
Well, I mean, one of their best forwards of modern history is a fourth rounder.
Yeah. I mean, Patrick Hornquist is in the seventh round. Now, to your point, Porth, you can find them later in the draft. Nikita Kucherov was 58th overall. Predators drafted 52nd overall that year. You want to take a guess at who they took? Mika Salamaki at 52.
Nice.
Nikita Kucherov at 58. Now,
I like some Mika Salamaki.
It's close. That's not just a Predators problem. I mean, you can go through this 2011 draft, and there are some doozies in here
that
were taken before Kucherov. You can play that game every year.
Yes.
The fact of the matter is, this has been a consistent issue with this team, is not being able to find or develop that elite forward. Now, some of that is a credit to them because they've never really been bad enough to draft in that spot. Like, the one year they were, you thought they were going to get, like, I remember the 2013 draft. I mean, people were like, they were just assuming, yep, Barkov's coming here. It's going to be Alex Barkov. Seth Jones is going number one or number two, and it's going to be Barkov. And then McKinnon goes one, Barkov goes two, Drouin goes three, and you're like, oh, okay, well, Seth Jones is right there. Let's take him. But that was really the last time they've had a chance to get one of those guys. So
Barkov would look pretty good.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad right now.
Is Barkov elite? I'd say he is.
I would say so.
He has entered that territory, or I should say conversation in my mind, here in the last year or two.
It's pretty good.
And I would put him in a pecking order of forwards, I would put him above Barzal.
I would too, but I think he's a lot better. I mean, two-way as well.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, people have different definitions of elite, and that's fine. I think the point is the Predators don't really have a guy that's close to that. I don't think Philip Forsberg is close to being elite. I think he's very, very good.
So if you tiered it, if you like we do with quarterbacks, Tannehill, Tannehill second tier, I think. A lot of people think he's third tier. So if you tiered it, what tier is Forsberg in?
Third, maybe.
He's a third tier forward?
Third tier guy.
I would agree.
Which is
pretty good.
Good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Moments where he's great.
So you got elite, great, very good. Is that your tiers?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I think he's very good. And you can win with very good. He's played well in the playoffs before. That just takes a whole lot else going right around you
need,
at that point.
Well, you need more very goods.
You need more very goods.
At least. Like, that's more realistic than – I mean, I'm not saying you can't possibly land one of these guys. You have to at some point. But I'm just saying, like, to me, you have a better chance of having a collection of really good players and a collective – effort than you do of finding an elite guy.
We'll continue this conversation when we come back, taking your thoughts as well on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. How did the Predators find an elite forward? We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, discussing the Predators. How do they find an elite forward to enter the mix here in Nashville? That's been something they've struggled with throughout the history of their franchise. How do you fix it as they move forward here? Cam on Twitter says, it's a pretty simple answer. Trade one of your aging defensemen, Ellis or Ekholm. I prefer to keep Ekholm. And you go get an elite forward. Johnny Hockey is the target for me. If I'm going after a forward, I don't know if Johnny Gaudreau is going to be the guy I'm going after. But.
Also, it sounds amazing for the other team. Hey, would you like one of our aging defensemen? Give me your elite forward. What do you
That's
say?
That's the thing. Like, I get, you know, the Predators do have good assets. Ryan Ellis, I think, is a good asset. Mattias Ekholm is a good asset. Roman Josi's not going anywhere. He's kind of in a different discussion here.
No.
But I don't think that Ryan Ellis and or Mattias Ekholm by themselves is enough to go get an elite guy. Like, he's just not. So then
you're throwing in a young player. You're throwing in a pick or two. You're throwing in.
And the thing is, we've had people bring up Jack Eichel. Like, there are teams out there, namely the Los Angeles Kings, the New York Rangers as well. They've got some high-level prospects. Like, if they want to go get Jack Eichel, they can do it. The Predators have got some good prospects. They don't have anybody. Like, even Philip Tomasino, he is not as high-leveled as, like, a Byfield out of L.A. or anybody like that.
But Thomas, in this conversation, Tomasino is a great example with where they drafted. Tomasino, if given the opportunity and developed right, and he puts his mind to it, could become a great forward.
Yeah.
Like,
could become a tier what forward?
I don't know if I would go tier one. Tier two, tier three?
He's got great speed.
Yes.
And that helps.
So you think that Tomasino could be better than Forsberg?
I mean.
It's tough. I mean, they're really different.
Is Forsberg his floor also?
No. No.
They're very different.
Right.
I mean, sure. Tomasino's a heck of a playmaker.
But he's the example that I'm thinking of when I bring up David Pastrnak, drafted in the late 20s. Pastrnak has turned into an elite goal scorer for the Bruins. The Preds need someone like that with where they always draft, like Tomasino, to turn into a potential tier two or tier three forward.
Well, and they need Tolvanen to build on last year and be a really good asset in your top six.
Because you can't always bank on trading or signing these guys, because then you're just going to be chasing your tail like they have been the last 10 years.
Yeah. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Ryan from Hermitage, who wants to weigh in. Ryan, thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road.
Morning, guys. A good way to get some talent like Kucherov, like a point, is, I don't miss him all, but Poyle's got to get over his little fear of drafting Russians. The year when they took Kucherov, Tampa Bay, we took Mika Salamaki over Kucherov. And then the other year they took Point, they took Justin Kirkland, a guy who's never even played in the NHL, over both these guys. And look what they've become. And Salamaki is a good hitter, and that's about it. And I don't think Justin Kirkland ever has played a game in the NHL. So the drafting's got to change his thing on certain players on from Russia or certain areas need to change too. He's got to stop looking at what has happened in the past and move on to the future and what's going to be good for the team. As drafting a Skorov was a good point of looking for the future instead of dwelling on his past.
Hey, thanks for the call, Ryan. We appreciate it. I mean, look, I don't think David Poile has like something against drafting players from Russia. I mean,
Don Cherry Poile? Is that what we're talking about?
He did just draft a first-round pick from Russia.
He did go a long time after Radulov screwed them.
I know.
He did go a long time not drafting Russians high.
So Radulov being immature was like a commentary on an entire country?
I think they were it was kind of the same thing, too, with college free agents, right? Like, you lose Jimmy Vesey, all of a sudden you get pretty aware of, man, we need to get these college free agents signed before they just go somewhere. I mean, the KHL at that time, I think you saw more players kind of leaving and going over there. You don't see that very much anymore. Like, the KHL, it just kind of is what it is. I think some people say it's the second best league in the world. I'd say third.
So you think during that time period it was just a little bit more fear? Yeah, just fear of losing out.
Maybe, but it could have just been the way it worked out. I mean,
right.
You know, Ryan brought up some good examples of players they've drafted ahead of some elite guys. I mean, look, you can make that – you can do that with every team in the league. You're just going to miss sometimes on some guys. Like Pavel Datsyuk was a six-round pick. Worked out pretty well. He's definitely an elite guy.
Which was totally fair
for
the rest of the league.
I mean,
the Red Wings.
So, I mean, sometimes players either. They develop later. They slip through the cracks. I mean, and that's what makes this draft so interesting is it's kind of a crapshoot. I mean, you've got some tape on guys, especially the top-level guys. Like, you know what they're going to be this year. But some of the, like, you know, getting into the third, fourth, fifth round of the draft where you can find some of these diamonds in the rough, and some of these guys have been playing in leagues that didn't play this year. So how do you really evaluate them when you have no tape on them since they were 15, 16 years old? Like, that's a tough job this year. So, I mean, the draft is tough anyway. And like I said, Ryan laid out some good examples there of players that were drafted ahead of some of the elite guys. But I think you can do that for every team in the league to some degree.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, look, at this point, first of all, like, we're talking about can they get an elite forward. I mean, you start with this team. If you want to start in the immediate future and what's ahead, the first question is, can you get rid of a forward, right?
Yep.
Because, like, that step has to happen.
You gotta have money.
Yeah, before you're doing anything, unless you can swing some kind of a deal, you know, with one of your defensemen. I mean, I think Ekholm would be much more attractive to teams even now, of course, last year. But just with his contract and I think him as a player right now compared with Ellis, not as down on Ellis as some people, but I think his deal, the length of his deal, postseason ups and downs, I think Ekholm would be a much more attractive asset for more teams.
Maybe he's got 1 year left. I mean, you'd have to have an extension in hand
right
before you do that.
Right.
But if you're going to go that route, I look back to the deadline last year. Like, if that's what you were going to do, why didn't you just do it at that point? That's when his value is at the highest.
Well, but we don't know. We don't know what was being said on the other end, right? There were conversations, right?
Yeah, but you probably could have got something pretty good.
I would think so. Right. I would think so. I mean, look, I also get the idea of, no, this is a pillar of the roster. Like, we can't lose that guy. I get that
sure.
sentiment. But that's you're going to have to do something painful to change anything significantly.
Raymond on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says there is one constant here that's Poile. If you want to change, you need to change. Look, I mean, I don't think there's any question. He has been – David Poile and his staff have been awesome at drafting defensemen, drafting goaltenders. They've been great. They have not drafted as well with forwards. I mean, they found some nice forwards. And they found some nice forwards later in rounds. I mean, I said Patrick Hornquist. He was the seventh round. I think he's the last pick of the draft. Worked out pretty well. I mean, they've had some good picks, but they have not had any elite guys at forward. I mean, you think about some of the first-round picks they've had. I mean, Kevin Fiala, he's a good player. He's still a good player. He's not an elite guy. I mean, some of this is where they've been drafting, and that's for sure, but I don't think there's any question. The list of defensemen that have been elite, a whole lot longer than the list of forwards that the Predators have found that are anywhere close to that territory.
Yeah, I mean, look, at this point, the track record is overwhelming that Poile is flat out better at finding defensemen than forwards, right? I mean, that's not even debatable, right?
Sure.
There's other ways to get elite forwards, but, you know, then you also, when you go out and trade assets for a Kyle Turris, or you go give a lot of money to Matt Duchene, you put yourself in a bind.
Like, I'm trying to think how many elite forwards they've had in the history of their franchise. Like, I'm thinking of one. Am I missing anybody? It's Paul Kariya.
I mean,
Peter Forsberg.
Peter Forsberg was.
Well, he was.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he played, what,
he
20
wasn't,
games here?
Yeah, he wasn't in his elite status when the Preds acquired him.
No. He's still very good.
Right.
No.
So Kariya's the one.
Like, Kariya's the one.
Yeah.
It's not very many over the course of that amount of time. And as we see, what it really boils down to is, like, you need somebody to be able to bail you out. And that's not just at the goaltending position. You need somebody. Like, last night is a perfect example. And we've seen Forsberg do this at times, but not anywhere near consistently enough. You need somebody that when the chips are down, you say, all right, get that guy the puck as many times as possible and just let him do his thing. I mean, Barzal, they had no answer for him last night in the third period. And look, we can debate whether or not Barzal's elite. That's fine. But they had no answer for him last night in the third period. Like, I look at this roster right now with the Predators forwards, like, there's nobody that I can point to where I'm like, yeah, the defense just has no answer for that guy. And that's a problem. Like, it's, you need that guy to be able to bail you out of certain situations. They don't have it.
Who would you say is the best forward that David Poile has ever drafted?
Oh, that's a good question.
Victor Arvidsson?
Victor Arvidsson, in my mind.
Maybe.
I mean, every other good forward that's come through here is either a signing or a trade.
Yeah. I mean, Hornquist's pretty good.
Sure. Yeah. Arvidsson, I would say Arvidsson because he holds the single season record for goals. Had 3 years in a row where he was, you know, really producing at a high level before he's taken a step back here in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
But Arvidsson, Hornquist, I mean, that's
a very thin list of candidates for that over a very long period of time.
Right.
And speaking of Victor Arvidsson, that's going to be a huge piece of what the Predators try to figure out here this offseason. Is there any chance that we could see the Victor Arvidsson of old return? Or is that player long gone at this point? We'll take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Talking Predators, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Discussing the forward group from the Predators, how do they find an elite guy? Can Victor Arvidsson bounce back? All that on the table. At Avanzis on Twitter says, rattle off the best forward Poile ever drafted. The guy can be a borderline point-per-game player, and a couple seasons ago was a point-per-game player for Dallas. What do you think about Radulov being the best forward that Poile's ever drafted?
Certainly worth the mention.
Could you say the most talented?
Oh, yeah. I think for sure on that.
Yeah.
But, again, you're talking Radulov, Arvidsson. Somebody on Twitter also said David Legwin. Like, look, I think...
Craig Smith.
Craig Smith. I mean, I think David Legwin was a good player. I don't think David Legwin's top level was really all that close to Victor Arvidsson's top level. I don't think it was close to Alex Radulov's top level. Like, you know, David Legwin's best years offensively, and he was good, but he was playing with Paul Kariya. That helps a little bit. So I think a lot of why, I mean, Legwin owns pretty much every offensive record for the Predators in terms of longevity. I think that's why he owns it. It's not because he was like some elite playmaker or anything. He was here for 12 years.
You'll still have
a lot of records.
You'll still take more of that, right?
Sure.
I mean,
than you've had.
We could debate best forwards, most talented forwards, but just think of the level of forwards that we're talking about here.
Exactly.
Just in totality over their years of drafting.
Yeah.
Yeah, not great.
Joey from Gallatin on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. I think from a pass production standpoint, Duchesne has the highest ceiling and potential to be considered elite if he has the right guys around him. If Phil and Tolvey are on his line this coming season, I believe we'll see a better and grounded and productive Duchesne.
Who said this?
Joey from Gallatin.
He's never been elite. He's been good. He's been very good. He's a 60-point guy. He's never been elite.
Yeah, he's not elite.
He never has been.
He's had good moments, but he's not elite.
I mean, do I agree that if he's around and has the right situation and has a healthy year that he could get back to 55, 60-point type production? I mean, I think it's possible, but that's not elite.
The conversation with Matt Duchesne right now is, can he be elite? The conversation with Matt Duchesne right now is, can he get back to a place even remotely close to what he was before he got here?
Right.
And if he can do that, I think you'll take that at this point if you're the Predators. Like, if you told me next year in an 82-game season Matt Duchesne was going to be a 55-point guy,
oh,
I would sign up for it right now if I'm the Predators.
Jump all
over. If you would have said that when they signed him, I think they'd be like,
hoping for more.
Let's get a little closer to the 70-point guy we just saw that played for Ottawa and Columbus last year. I think right now, David Poile would run to the fax machine and sign that right now if you told him Matt Duchesne's going to be a 55-point guy next year.
I mean, if you told him he'd be a 40-point guy, people would feel way better in that building. way better. So, I mean, we're steps, multiple levels away from the word elite.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Heidi from Dixon texting in.
Hey.
Decades with no cup speaks for itself. No credit for talented forwards he drafted that we didn't keep. I mean, he still drafted them. It's talking about Radulov, Fiala gone.
Right.
He did draft
them. The question is, who the best forwards he drafted? That's right. The question.
I mean, the real question with Heidi is, does she know about the panic or bet?
Heidi, do you know that we've got a bet on your behalf?
Thanks for weighing in, Heidi.
You're going to be getting, maybe, a pedicure.
Thanks for weighing in, Heidi. How are your feet? How are your feet these days?
Let us know on the text line.
Or Lou.
Yeah, or Lou.
Yeah. Yeah. Please send us your full legal name and a picture of your feet.
Ben on the text line. Calm down, Robbie. Nobody uses fax machines. Yeah, what in the world was I talking about?
I love
fax
it.
Fax machine. They were running the fax machine.
That's great. Signing old school. Up. Gets on the landline. Gets in the phone booth.
Yeah. See if we can't get that figured out. One guy that played borderline to an elite level a couple years ago was Victor Arvidsson when he was healthy. 34 goals in 58 games. And that year, I remember, like, his goals per game average was right there with Ovechkin. So, didn't play as many games as Ovechkin, obviously. And an issue with Arvidsson that year that's been an issue pretty much ever since then was his availability and his injuries. But that was the last time we saw Victor Arvidsson really look like Victor Arvidsson, was that 18-19 season where he set the single-season goal-scoring record with 34 goals. Ever since then, he's been dealing with injuries. He's just not quite looked like the same guy. I mean, 15 goals in 19-20 in 57 games, and then 10 goals this past season in 50 games. That's a big part of this offseason, Joe, is to figure out exactly what Victor Arvidsson's future looks like. I mean, just from an age standpoint, he's 28, so it's not like he's over the hill or anything, but the injuries seem to have piled up. They seem to have affected him. And the question now is, if you're the Predators, is there any confidence that he's ever going to get back to that level that we saw a couple of years ago, or is that gone at this point? I don't know if you're ever 100% sure trying to figure that stuff out, but that's the big question now for the Predators. And if you feel like it is gone, what do you do? How much trade value does Victor Arvidsson have? Is there a chance you leave him exposed? How do you think the Predators go about handling this situation with Victor Arvidsson this offseason?
Well, first of all, I do agree with something Poile said in that end of season or postseason presser about Arvidsson in terms of, to paraphrase, this is the kind of guy who hears this stuff and could really be due for a comeback. I mean, I think intangibly, Arvidsson has everything you want and is going to do everything he can to get back there. I don't know if the physics are going to hold up for him. I mean, it's been a real blast watching him play. And when he had it rolling, man, such a impactful player, such a pest for opponents. But they've taken some shots at him. And they're going to keep taking some shots at him. And I don't think there's any doubt that that has added up at his expense. So would I be shocked if Victor Arvidsson had a couple more 30-goal seasons in him before he's done? I would not be shocked by that. You would be shocked.
Yes.
If you are shaking your head.
Yeah.
I'm approaching that territory where I'd be shocked.
I mean, I would not bet on it. I would bet probably not, but I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, the trend is not good. The trend is, and the thing is, it's like, you know, think about the bubble, especially. That was like, oh, geez, that's like a totally different speed of player right
yep.
there than he had been at during the regular the 19-20 regular season.
And that's what I can't quite figure out because. And David Poile talked about this openly in his press conference about Victor Arvidsson. He brought up the Bortuzzo hit, which we all, like, that's what we all go back to is when things started to change for Victor Arvidsson. But to your point, he came back in the Arizona series, and that was after the Bortuzzo hit, and he looked like Victor Arvidsson for four games. Now, why has he not been able to get back to that level since then? There have been some other injuries, obviously, along the way. But the injury that everybody points back to, there is at least a very brief time, a very brief example of him looking like the old Victor Arvidsson.
Well, and frankly, I you may not count it as the playoffs, but I do. But, yeah, I mean, he obviously his overall postseason performance has not been great, right? I mean, he's been neutralized more than in the regular season, which is not a big surprise. But in that series, I thought was some of his best postseason hockey even. So I agree, but that's where the trend is like, okay, so that one was a big one, but there have been others, and you start to pile up, and now you're pushing toward 30, and you're 5'9", 180, and sometimes it's just reality.
So how much confidence do you have in Victor Arvidsson's ability to bounce back? Are we going to see the Victor Arvidsson of old again in a Predators uniform? We'll take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Rob and Franklin, hang with us. We'll get to you on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I'm going to be joined to begin the 8 o'clock hour by Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic. We'll get into what's been a wild week in college athletics, the NCAA. Coming up with her to begin the 8 o'clock hour. Right now, talking Predators, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Rob from Franklin, who wants to weigh in. Rob, thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road.
Hey, thanks, gentlemen. Interesting to watch the Canadians playing Cole Caulfield so much. He's a very small, energetic, very fast person.
Yep.
That really reminds me of Arvidsson in the past, and just he doesn't get hit much because he burns with speed. He has a very, very good shot. He has a very, very good first move. And I just watch that and I think, oh man, that was Arvidsson 5 or 6 years ago. And what's the difference? The difference is that he's probably had an ACL, probably had an MCL, and he is not as fast, and he does get hit more. And I would question or ask the question: is there an upper body injury that has caused that? Because his lack of goal production, because he's had his chances, but he doesn't seem to find the net as much. And so, for all of those reasons, I would not at all be surprised if he did get exposed. And I wouldn't be surprised if he did get chosen as well, because there is the lingering question: could he have a bounce back with a change of scenery?
Hey, thanks for the call, Rob. We appreciate it. I mean, I think Caulfield's a great example. He's playing really well right now for the Canadiens in the playoffs. He's a smaller guy. He does have the speed. You know, to the upper body injury part, maybe that affecting his shot. Could be. I don't know. I focus more kind of on the speed part of this. And Adam Bengen at some point during last regular season.
Because that helps your shot percentage, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when you get better shots because you're alone in front of the net.
Exactly. Well, yeah. And Vingan came out with a piece this past season kind of highlighting his breakaway opportunities and his opportunities on the rush, and they've gone pretty severely down the last few years. And that to me is a pretty explicit example of what we're talking about here of he just doesn't look like the same guy out there, and that has been shown in the breakaway numbers, the odd man rush numbers, and the chances that he's generating on that front as well.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like there are times, you know, when it's like, man, he used to bury that one. But I think it's probably more related to speed. But, yeah, those percentages, you're talking 12.6, 11.74, 17.44 during that ridiculous 34-goal in 58 games year, 11.8, and then this year 6.6.
Yep.
A massive, pretty sharp downturn there.
Yeah, and how many times this year did we see Arvidsson coming down the wing and he just winds up on that slap shot from the top of the right circle? Some of that, I mean, he's done that at times throughout his career, but some of that I think is he's just not had the speed to get around that defenseman that he used to have, and he's got to let it fly from there instead of cutting to the net.
Probably hasn't helped that he had to be like their net front presence on the power play, you know, as the smallest guy on the ice for – a while.
There is that.
I mean, that's not ideal.
Worth, what do you think about this Victor Arvidsson conversation and your confidence level and his ability to bounce back at this point?
So Jeremy K. Gover joined me on Preds Insiders Monday night and made a comment that I agree with, that it's more likely next season that Victor Arvidsson has one of those 10 to 15 goal seasons than it is that he gets back to hovering around 30. And in the spirit of that, Gover threw a hypothetical at me that I hadn't thought of, and I want to get y'all's reaction to it. You know, we're talking about trying to get rid of one of these big contracts. I think a lot of Preds fans would lean towards Matt Duchene to see if Matt Duchene could go to Seattle through this expansion draft process. You're going to have to give up something else with Duchene to make that happen. Would you give up Arvidsson to Seattle to make that happen?
Yeah, we've talked about that. You know, I think that's...
I mean, maybe. And that's also, at that point, would be $12.25 million that Seattle's taking on per year at that point.
Right.
That's a heck of an ask. You probably... My guess would be... It's just a guess. My guess would be if they took on that much money for you, you'd be giving up Duchene and Arvidsson and something else, would be my guess.
And Tomasino?
I don't know if it'd be Tomasino, but
no.
It would probably be something else.
A pick. Yeah, of some sort.
Because that's a whole lot of money for Seattle to be taken on at that point.
I have serious doubts that they would, that Seattle would go for that. I could be wrong.
I tend to agree with that, in that why would Seattle want a declining player with Arvidsson to go along with Duchene?
Well, like, I mean, based on production, two declining players, sure, pretty big numbers, one with a huge number.
Sure. Like, if I'm Seattle, I'd rather have, like, a Rem Pitlick or Dante Fabro or someone like that than Arvidsson.
Well, I think if you're Seattle, the only way you consider it is if you watch them and you say, all right, well, they've still got something there, and you're hoping for a Jonathan Marchessault, Riley Smith type situation, that they took both of them from Florida. And then both of them ended up being great in Vegas. That, to me, still is a pretty big risk if you're Seattle at this point. I don't know. Like, I think there is a decent chance that Arvidsson is left exposed in this draft. And, look, regardless of the Duchene part of this, like, if it's just Arvidsson, do you take that if you're Seattle? I think you consider probably. It, but I'm not sure that they would.
Yeah, maybe.
Based on what he's been the last 2 years. They might.
I would guess they would if it's as simple as that. I mean, who else would be exposed to? I mean, I suppose they could.
So if you're the Predators, are you okay with that? If you're leaving Arvidsson exposed, it's not a huge cap number, but it is $4.25 million per year. Are you okay with that? If it means you still got Duchene, you still got Johansson, and you're losing Arvidsson.
It doesn't really take care of the problem.
I agree.
You know, it's not.
But the problem is,
yeah, you may not be able to.
It's so difficult to take care of that problem right now.
No doubt.
With two $8 million guys down the middle that just haven't brought you enough.
I think, to me, Seattle has a much better chance of being interested in Johansson. I think you have a better chance, if you're the Preds, of making a deal around Johansson. And I'm not sure that's the way you should go.
I still think it'd be hard to do that, but I think of the options, you're right.
I think it would be easier, though.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, leaving – I mean, yeah, you get a little bit of money off your books. He appears to be declining, but you're still really in the same spot, and now you have one less guy who could still bounce back and still could be a threat for you who's gone.
But doesn't – to that point, I mean, we're talking about whether or not Victor Arvidsson can bounce back. I mean, it feels like we've been having this same conversation about this group for 2 years, about guys bouncing back or guys getting back to the same level that we've seen them play at the past. I mean, I asked David Poile about this in the end-of-season press conference. Like, at what point do you as a general manager just have to say, yeah, that's probably not going to happen, and you've got to adapt and adjust from there? Like, to me, I've reached that point. Like, I don't expect Victor Arvidsson, Ryan Johansson, Matt Duchene, Philip Forsberg, all of these guys to ever get back to playing to the same high level that at one time they were all playing at. Like, all at the same time? Like, I don't expect that to happen anymore. So, to me, that's why you have to shake up this core.
Well, I would disagree a little bit. I think, first of all, Forsberg isn't way off.
No.
I mean, if Forsberg,
I'm talking about Forsberg, all of them getting back to what we've seen all at the
of
same
them,
time.
Oh, no. All of them, no. But I would say specifically, individually, Forsberg, he's, you know, you're good with
fine.
What he is.
Yeah.
Johansson is it's the guy that
– he's not good enough in the regular season. He's just not. He's not good enough. He's got to be better. This playoff stuff is fine, and he plays well in the playoffs. You don't get paid $8 million just to play well in the playoffs.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree that the last 2 years he absolutely has not done enough. It's been disappointing. It's been befuddling. I'm not convinced because, look, when you can do it for stretches like he has in the postseason, it's there. Yeah. I'm not convinced he can't locate it and play like he did 3 years ago. I'm not convinced that's over. I think with Arvidsson, it's a bigger concern about, you know, the physical battering. And with Duchesne, I mean, just what we've seen from Duchesne, it's just not close to what he's been.
Well, I mean, think about kind of the talking point a couple years ago when Duchesne came in, and even more last year was David Poile always goes back to we need our best players to be our best players. That's fine. That's true. But there's not really been a time the last 2 years with this group where all of their best players at forward have been playing that way at the same time. So I think if they come back in and this core doesn't get changed this offseason and it's the same heading into next year and you're just expecting that at some point those guys are going to all start playing together and playing well at the same time again, I think you're fooling yourself at that point.
Well, there's always the herd line.
There's that.
Talk more about the herd line.
There's that. When we come back, we'll switch gears. We'll get into a wild week with the NCAA, the Supreme Court, all kinds of stuff brewing right now in the world of college athletics. Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic will join us to break it all down. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.